my first year, I was absolutely clueless. Like, I had no clue what the hell I was doing.
Yeah. Hey, the market hustle, helping you to succeed, teaching like nobody else. Okay. Financial empowerment, giving you strategies for generational wealth. So you can start helping yourself. More money for you to be getting. This the moment for you to be winning and be living financially independent.
Welcome back, Market Hustle community. This is episode 23, and it's great to have all of you back. If you're new to the podcast, my name is Josh. I am the guy behind the Market Hustle podcast and Instagram page as well. And it's so great to have you here. And keep in mind, if you are new, we have 22 other amazing episodes covering a diverse amount of topics around the financial world, kind of understanding, helping you understand how the stock market works and operates. So make sure you give those a listen after this amazing episode. That being said, I have both of our great co-hosts back for another episode. And today we have another special one. So we tend to get a lot of questions from brand new investors who are just kind of getting started. And one of the first questions people tend to ask is, hey, what the hell do I invest in? Like, what should I actually buy? And it's always difficult to give an answer, like a general answer, because everybody has a different tolerance for risk. So like what they can withstand to give their money and potentially, you know, make money off of that. Like everybody has a different tolerance for risk and everybody has different investment goals. Like maybe you're investing to retire in 20 years. Maybe you're investing to retire in 40 years. Both of those situations are going to require a slightly different portfolio. So the whole idea behind this podcast is each of us are going to give our own asset allocations and kind of help you understand why we have it set up that way, as well as our investment philosophy to just help you get a better understanding of how you could potentially structure your own portfolio. So that being said, let's go ahead and quickly introduce the co-hosts back for another episode. Let's start with Bafi. Bafi, how are you doing today, my friend?
I am doing great. I'm excited for this episode because oftentimes the audience and all the listeners get to hear a lot about investing strategies and things of that nature, but rarely they ever get to hear and see exactly what our portfolios look like and our reasons and strategy behind that. So I'm really excited to share some of the methodologies and strategies that, you know, we all employ and some of the similarities and differences within all of that, right? So a lot of people don't realize that when it comes to investing, it really has to fit your personal identity, your financial goals, and your responsibilities and what you really want to obtain and extract out of life. And so I think this is going to give a lot of people key insights into the differences in how we all structure our portfolio somewhat similarly, but unique to our own identity. And that is a very powerful takeaway for this episode, but excited to get rolling. Let's keep cooking.
Good stuff. Great to have you back for another episode. Pierce, how about you, my friend? How are you doing on your side of things?
I'm good, bro. I just celebrated my birthday a couple of days ago. So
nice. Yeah, I'm
very, very blessed to make it another year. So other than that, dude, I can't really top Bafi ever when he comes to stuff like this, but I'm excited to see how you guys structure your portfolios and how other people think how we structure our portfolios.
Great stuff. And yeah, happy late birthday as well. Really glad you're able to celebrate that and enjoy the day.
Yep.
So yeah, let's start off with, first off, I just want to give a little context for all the listeners. So Bafi and I have been investing for a little bit longer compared to Pierce. So I've gone a little bit over a decade of investing experience now. Bafi, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're right around that time frame as well. Is that correct?
Yep. I'm around 30 years. I mean, oh my gosh, that's
30 years.
No, I'm saying I'm around a decade. I'm going on year 11.
Okay.
Since I turn 31 in August, this August coming up. So
good stuff. And then Pierce, correct me if I'm wrong as well, but you've been kind of more intentionally investing yourself over the last few years. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, I mean, I started 2020 independently and, then I got some help and, over the last probably 2 years, 2.5 years since I've been really taking it seriously and figuring out what all the numbers in the portfolio mean and all the funds and everything like that.
Sweet, sweet. So this is going to be a cool episode because on one end, Bafi and I are a little bit more experienced on the portfolio side of things, portfolio building, and just the experience we have in the stock market as well, where a lot of people, especially listening to this podcast, will probably be able to relate more to Pierce and just kind of how he sees things because he's still kind of fairly newer in the investing world and still learning in and soaking in a lot of things. So I'm glad that we're going to have this wide variety of different experience levels in this podcast episode. That being said, let's just start off with this first question to just help give people, the listeners, some understanding of, you know, our thought process when we were first getting started. It's like that first year, basically. Let's start there. So that first year of investing, how did you go about thinking about structuring your portfolio? And what were some of the problems you ran into? So maybe, Bafi, do you want to tackle this one first? Like, just give a little bit of context around that first year when you were just starting to get into that early stage.
Absolutely, man. So my first year was very interesting. And it started with buying my first stock, and that was Bank of America at $14 a share about 10 years ago, right? And I really didn't know what I was doing. And so I know many listeners might be new to the investment world and not sure if they're doing it right. But I can promise you, as long as you focus on staying in the game and constantly educating yourself through this podcast and other resources, you're going to do incredible things. So initially, I didn't really know much. I knew damn near nothing, none of the technical terms and all the financial jargon and none of that, right? And I realized the best thing I could have done in that first year was really learn, just read books, take courses if need be. And so the first year was interesting, but it was also scary because it was the first time ever that I'm putting money into something that I actually don't really fully know or fully understand. So you see the stock price go up, and then I'm happy when it's up, right? It goes down and like, oh, shoot, I'm a little bit nervous here. So it took a while to kind of work through that emotional roller coaster and understand like, oh, okay, the volatility is actually normal and that's regular. But I think the biggest challenge that I faced in the beginning was lack of resources, right? My financial resources. I was like, what, 19, 20? Still in college, didn't really have much money. I couldn't work full time because I was literally studying all the time. So I didn't have a lot of money to put into the market. And then once I saw that money double, that's when I really understood why it is so important to have a strong foundation in money management, right? Meaning, you know, being able to earn money through a skill that's in demand that you can leverage to make a lot of money or decent salary. And then also reducing my, making sure I have low expenses, you know, so that helped a lot. And at the time I had student loans, but I didn't care because I wasn't paying it at that moment because I only had like $20 I could put a month into the investment portfolio anyway. But I just kept adding to it. And then I just saw it going up over time and never looked back ever since. So that's kind of how my first year was. And that helped me really, helped me usher into reading, you know, more financial books, getting the financial jargon, the lingo, the investment world, getting familiar with it. So for anybody that's new that might be unsure if they're doing it right, they hear all the news, all the things happening. And also you see a lot of people on social media, and so you might be comparing what you're doing to theirs. I urge you to kind of tune out the noise and really just focus on your journey and just getting better 1% each day at a time. That's it. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't agree more. And a lot of important point outs right there, Bafi. I think one thing people have to realize is it will take some time to figure out what type of strategy or what type of portfolio even will really kind of fit your lifestyle. Because, you know, first off, we're all different. Like, we all have different goals kind of going into this game. And then we also just have maybe different philosophies or different tolerances for what we're willing to withstand when it comes to the different assets that are available to us to invest in. So as a newer investor, like if you're just getting started in this game, like maybe you haven't invested or maybe you've only been investing for a year or two, it's important to realize that you're not going to have it all figured out right away. And be patient with yourself because that's part of the learning process. It's going to take you a few years of kind of trial and error to really start to get a better understanding of first, how the stock market dynamics kind of work. And second, what you're willing to kind of put into the markets risk-wise, or like what type of money you're willing to throw into the markets, into the different assets, right? Because there's so many different options. So great point outs. And my story, ultimately, I'll just kind of dive into that. It's pretty similar to Bafi's. Like my first year, I was absolutely clueless. Like I had no clue what the hell I was doing. I kind of went in with the mentality of, well, penny stocks are undervalued. Like that's just how I thought of it because they're like close to a penny or just a dollar or two. And I was trying to like find those needle in the haystack stocks that would go over to like 100x, because my philosophy at the time was, well, like, hey, I see that there's like there was Facebook stock 10 years ago. And that was a recent one that like was really starting to catch Wall Street's eyes over 10 years ago. And people were really starting to like that stock. And I was just like, okay, well, there's that one, but that's already gone up to the moon. You know, like that one's already done, finished, because investors have already kind of made a lot of money off of it. Of course, looking back on it, that was a huge thinking error. But my whole point of view was, well, if Facebook can go from X amount to this crazy valuation, then maybe another stock can do that. So I got to find the stock that's going to 10X, just like these companies have done, before it does that. Like, that was my thought process. And looking back on it, or just, I have a lot of conversations now with brand new investors. That's how a lot of brand new investors think of it, right? They jump into this game thinking that they can find the needle in the haystack. And of course, some get lucky, but luck isn't really an investment strategy you want to rely on. You want to rely on something a little bit more stable or tried and tested, you know, has some substance to it, if you will. So yeah, my first year, even 2 years, was more of just kind of stumbling on my own mistakes. You know, I do give my past self some credit though, because I went into it all with a learning mindset. Like, I didn't think to myself that I had it all figured out. Like, I knew that it was going to take some time to kind of figure it all out. So I was willing to invest money in the form of losing money to learn, right? So like, even if I lost a couple $100 in the stock market, I was like, well, the lessons I'll learn from that are going to be much more valuable. And ultimately they were. But if we can help you with this podcast to avoid those lessons and to save that money, then I think our mission here will be accomplished. But yeah, it took me until stumbling on my feet and reading a bunch of books, going through some YouTube videos. Keep in mind, 10 years ago, it was harder to find resources than it is now to learn about stock market investing. Luckily for you, there's a lot more resources out there with different perspectives and people coming from different angles and backgrounds that will help you understand this stuff a lot better than maybe it was 10 years ago in the internet world. But nonetheless, the best thing I ever did when I was just getting started was to continue to have and embrace a student mindset and continue to just read as much as I could to understand deeply how this game actually works. The more you kind of lean into that, I think the better off you'll be as an investor and the better your performance will be as well. So keep doing what you're doing. The fact that you're even listening to this podcast alone says a lot about that. And you know, you're clearly taking the time to understand stuff. So yeah, Keep going down that rabbit hole. But Pierce, maybe tell us a little bit about your journey. Like, I know it's still kind of fairly new, but give us a little bit of insights, like how you've kind of been thinking about it and maybe even like how you've been restructuring your thought process around the stock market as well.
Absolutely, dude. I mean, growing up, I'm very blessed to have my dad. He's financially savvy. So I would always ask him questions about stuff, you know, growing up. And when I was probably about 17, 18 is when I started really getting interested with this investing thing. And I was leaned more towards real estate at first. And so obviously I didn't have the income nor the, you know, the money to go buy properties and whatnot. So what I was looking at, I was reading a whole bunch of mortgage books, and I found these things called REITs. It's a real, you know, real estate investment trust. So it's like mortgage companies, these real estate development companies that you can put money into and they grow over time. And the benefits of them is like dividend income. And so I quickly found out that that's not what I want. I'm not trying to put in, you know, $50 a week and then have my money make me money. And so what I had to start doing is I reached out to a financial advisor. And so it's not for everybody, but for me, it was a helpful hand because, you know, he was able to direct me in a way, these, you know, where I wanted my risk tolerance and how long I wanted to invest for and what my ultimate goal was. So for me, it was easy, you know, not easy per se, but it's easier to find the access to these things online, right? So you don't even need like a professional to do it nowadays. I mean, you can watch so many different videos online or listen to podcasts such as this to, you know, try to correlate what your risks are and everything is. It's an interesting thing starting nowadays versus when you guys did, because, you know, it's just so accessible now to find things you need to learn.
Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely. And ultimately, like, I give you a lot of credit for being willing to learn from others, because sometimes it's hard to kind of dive in to reach out to people who are at higher levels than you. Like some people get a little intimidated talking to people who are at higher levels than them. And the fact that you're willing to kind of look into this game or go into this game with a student mindset ultimately says a lot about yourself and willingness to learn. And it's really hard to teach somebody to have the desire to learn. So when you have it, hang on to it, continue to embrace that because it's only going to help you out in the long run.
Pearson, Josh, I actually have a quick question. Like in the first year of your investment journey, like did you guys buy individual stocks at all? Or like, you know, like what was your experience with like buying individual stocks like?
Well, of course, I thought I was going to be the next Warren Buffett, like right out the gate. Of course, I did. I shared this story, I think, in the first episode, but I was trying to look for like the needle in the haystack, literally. Mm-hmm. And I went for penny stocks. They were like marijuana, cannabis, penny stocks. Gotcha. And they were actually like looking back on it, they were absolutely garbage companies with no potential just because they were I didn't really understand fundamental investing. Or fundamental analysis, but they were just like companies that were like full of debts. And the reason why I jumped into them was just because there was an article that I read at the time where it was just being like, it was something on the lines of three cannabis stocks that may go on to be like the best cannabis stocks in the world or whatever. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it, it was basically a pump and dump. Like there was probably some company or whatever that was just like, yeah, just put this in the public, you know, that way they can, you know, juice up the stock. And that's exactly what happened, where the stock did jump like 60-70% like over the course of a couple of weeks, and then eventually it went down to zero practically. So yeah, I learned my lesson with the penny stocks side of things kind of early on. It was a good lesson to learn.
Nice. What about you, Pierce?
I invested in car companies, dude, like Ford Motor Company and Chevrolet, you know, all these different, you know, companies, you know, I'm super interested in cars. So, you know, one of my friends was like, yeah, you just have to, you know, he was this day trader type of guy, right? He's like, yeah, you just need to invest in stuff that, you know, you like. So I invested in the car companies and it wasn't a whole bunch of money, but it went absolutely nowhere. So that's when I started to reach out to an advisor and say, hey, I really need to figure this out and how to structure myself so I can leverage this to grow.
Yeah. So I literally was building my own index fund, if you will. Like I was buying individual stocks, but I was literally like creating my own index funds before I even discovered what index funds were. Right. So and I thought it was genius, too. I would have done fine, you know, if I kept that strategy, honestly, over the long term, I would have done just fine. Right. And I'm going to tell you guys the strategies that I was using. This is what I think makes, you know, just to toot my own horns a little bit. I think at that age, right, at the age of 19, 20, and the fact that I was thinking about it this way, I really had that index fund fabric in my brain. I just didn't even know that there was freaking index funds already in place. Mm-hmm. So what I was doing is, right, you look at the 9 industries or 10 sectors, however you want to cut it, you have what? You have technology / software, you have healthcare / pharmaceuticals, right? You have industrials, you have energy, right? You have consumer staples, consumer discretionary, all these other sectors and industries. What I was literally doing was I was just buying like the top 5 individual companies, individual stocks in each of these industries. Because I looked at it and I said, shit, Coca-Cola's winning and Pepsi's winning. I don't have to pick one or the other. Shit, give me the top 5, right? Because if somebody's going to win, it's going to be somebody in the top 5 anyway. And I can have all of them and benefit. So if I had ExxonMobil, I had BP, I had Chevron, right? If I had Apple, I had Microsoft, if I had Home Depot, I had Lowe's, right? So that's how I was literally going about it. But then I realized over time, oh, there's index funds, right? And then my strategy, because I didn't have a lot of cash, right? It would have taken me like forever to kind of get strong volume and a lot of it. So it's interesting now that I look back, I was like, I was building my own goddamn index funds when I wish back then I had resources like this where I would have easily followed, you know, Josh at the Market Hustle or, you know, watched a YouTube video or listen to a podcast like this. And I would have known about index funds just like that and began benefiting from it. Right. So the reason why I ask that question is because a lot of times when we first start investing, and many people out there might be doing this as well, is because in the beginning, you're so excited. You see the things that you hear the stock. Oh, NVIDIA's up. It's going crazy. This stock is doing this. I mean, right now we got meme stocks going fucking bonkers. But you guess it's easy to fall for that trap and thinking, yeah, I can just buy all these individual stocks and just do my own thing and win. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's highly unlikely that you're going to do well over the long term, because the manpower required and the like money contribution required to even execute that at a decent level is insane. Ridiculous. It's definitely not worth it, especially not at the beginning stages. So that was the lesson I learned very well.
That's a great lesson to learn. Bafi, I'm curious, at what point did you kind of start to run into the index fund world, and when did the light bulb kind of go off on that end?
Man, shit, I was literally 3 years in. Working like overtime for 3 years before I discovered index funds, and so then I tweaked my whole portfolio literally. I know we'll dive into kind of how we have our portfolios set up a little bit later in the episode, but yeah, took me some time. I was like, shit, I could have just taken the shortcut. I took the long road.
Well, and I think it's important to point out as well, just for everybody listening, that it's okay for your investment strategy to kind of evolve, and it will evolve over time. Like, as you learn the different dynamics of what's at play, it's silly to think that you should have it all figured out before you buy your first stock, because it's going to take years to understand everything on a deeper level, like on a mastery level, right? It takes time to understand how this stock market world operates. So you do kind of have to be patient with yourself on that end. And ultimately, I think that's exactly what kind of leads to people having analysis paralysis, where especially nowadays, like there is so much information out there, which is great on one end, because it's never been easier for somebody who is new and eager to learn how the stock market investing world works. But at the same time, it's kind of like informational overload, where now a lot of people feel kind of like that they're being tugged in different directions. Like they hear one strategy, they hear like a trading strategy, they hear like a dividend investing strategy, they hear about an index investing strategy, they hear about stock picking strategy. Like there's just so many different ways. So like a lot of newer investors, they just get kind of frozen because they're just being tugged in all these different directions with everything they're reading. And ultimately to them, I would say, you kind of just have to make that jump. And I think the best way to do that is to just start with a simple index fund, like a VOO, like some sort of S&P 500 index fund, or even a step further, a broad-based index fund that's like a global stock market fund. And just start there. It's like you can actually get in the markets. And then as you're starting to gain experience in the market, when you see your portfolio growing, ebbing and flowing between the red days and the green days, you're going to gain more experience of the dynamics that are at play. And then ultimately, I think you will start to like wisen up based on that experience to start to reconstruct your portfolio in a way that suits you best, right? But the longer you kind of delay making that initial jump, the longer it's going to take you to really get to that mastery level and actually build a portfolio that works for your specific situation. So like to me, like don't be afraid to like start with a broad-based index fund portfolio. And then you can always try out different strategies down the road, right? But like don't go to the risky stuff right out the bat. Like don't make the mistake I made where you're trying to find these penny stocks that are going to go 100x overnight. Like skip that stage. Start with the broad-based index funds so you can at least get a feel for the ups and downs of the market, because you can read every single book, you can watch every single YouTube video there is on stock market investing, but until you understand the emotional impact of the day-to-day fluctuations, it's going to be really hard to get to that mastery stage, if you will. I don't know, Bafi, do you have any comments about that as well? I'm sure you have quite the experience on that end as well.
No, absolutely. No, I think that's a great point. And you definitely touched on something important, which is understand that, you know, your investment philosophy and strategy will evolve over time, right? Because as you become more knowledgeable, as you see things happening over the years, as responsibilities in your life changes, right? So does your goals, and a lot of things change. So it is important to give yourself some grace and be flexible and open-minded, and knowing that, yes, one strategy might be working, say, at a younger age, right, in your investment career. But maybe in your middle age where you might have kids and so forth, you might need something that's a little bit more streamlined, which Josh literally just highlighted some of the best ways to go about doing that. And then maybe later on down the road, you might need something a little bit more conservative, approach, you know, with a little bit more safety net along with it. So keep in mind that things will change over time, just like how your body changes over time, right? Your jobs and roles change over time. You know, the decisions you make, the food you eat change over time. The music you listen to change over time. Understand that that is a natural course of the process. So don't feel like if things are changing or you're thinking differently, doesn't mean something's wrong with you. Right? You're asking questions and you're going to find the answers that way.
Couldn't agree more. Let's jump into our investment philosophy then. Let's dive a little bit deeper, and then we'll be sharing our asset allocations a little bit after that. So investment philosophy, the main thing around this is mostly how we kind of approach the stock market, like how we kind of see our portfolio and why we have it set up the way it is. So again, I would say ultimately me, Pierce, and Bafi are going to have generally the same investment philosophy, like how we kind of approach. We're all long-term investors. We're all going at this game with a ownership mindset. But I guess it might be helpful to give everybody who's listening a little bit more insight in how we view the stock markets at our current age and how we view the stock market with what we're trying to accomplish from it by whatever milestone or goal that we have set. So either Bafi, Pierce, or I can go first myself.
I want to hear what you have to say, Josh.
Let me jump into it. Let's go. So ultimately, I'm 28 years old. So my general philosophy when it comes to somebody who's in their 20s, including myself, is you have a lot more opportunity to take on a more aggressive investment strategy. And being in your 20s or even your 30s, you're only going to have this opportunity for so long, right? Like you're only going to be young for so long. You're only going to be able to take more aggressive risks for so long before it gets harder to recover from potential hiccups or disruptions in your potential life, you know, with whatever happens. So for me, you know, when I don't have a lot of responsibilities when it comes to, I don't have any kids right now, but down the road, you know, it'll get harder to take more aggressive risks. So my whole philosophy right now at this current stage of my life is I want to take a more aggressive investment approach just because I'm in the position to be able to do so. And I have the resources that allow me to do so as well. So that's kind of how I'm approaching this initially, kind of looking in. And because of that, like my portfolio, you know, I'll dive into the asset allocation a little bit later. I'm okay with having certain stocks or funds that other people might see as too risky or too aggressive, right? If I was in my 50s or if I was in my 40s even, my portfolio would look a lot different. And it will look a lot different. My portfolio is going to change with time. It's not going to be the same as it is now. But because I'm younger, I'm a big fan of taking advantage of my time, because time is ultimately the greatest asset that any investor will get in the stock markets. And the longer time horizon you have to use to your advantage, the longer you can withstand the ebbs and flows of these market cycles, which that's all we're constantly seeing, you know, when it comes to different asset classes and types. Like there's constantly different cycles going on, ebbing and flowing back and forth between the green days and the red days. So the younger you are, the more you're in a position to be able to stomach those ups and downs and even recover from potential crashes if you have an aggressive portfolio. Like it's not going to hurt as much. A 40% decline is not going to hurt as much if you're 28 compared to if you're 58 about to enter retirement, right? So I'm taking advantage of that. And that's ultimately like my general philosophy of why I have the position set up the way I do.
I can totally attest to that, dude. I mean, being at the age that I'm at right now, it's one thing that I was talking to Josh and Bafi about earlier, you know, a couple weeks back, for everybody who's listening, is how to reallocate my situation and my portfolio so I could take more risk. Since what I am currently invested in is, you know, not as risky as I think that I should be in, especially at my age and my, you know, general wants and goals in life. And so for that, I'm going to have to reallocate a lot of my, you know, a lot of my stocks to more aggressive. So I can attest to that. Take more, you know, take more of an aggression route as the younger you are, especially like in my situation. I'm at home. I don't pay bills and I don't have kids or anything like that. So I just, you know, dude, I can hit it hard.
Nice. Spot on. And I think you both touched on something that's very important. And peers, you're doing it at a very early age too. So the advantage there is incredible. And I would also agree that early 20s to mid 40s, give and take, you want to focus more on growth and being aggressive with your allocation, right? And so, because once you get to like your mid, you know, early 30s, mid 30s, and, you know, if you have kids, family you're responsible for, you need cash on hand because there's no way, you know, so during that gap, during that time frame, especially the first 10 to 15 years of having a family and raising children, you need a lot of cash on hand. Kids are expensive, right? Mm-hmm. So you might not be able to pump as much into the market during those years. But if you manage to save from 20 to 30, 20 to 35, if you can feed the beast, oh yeah, go ham, go crazy. Okay. Put that money to work and, you know, make sure you're having fun at the same time because you have to enjoy the life experience and life journey. Mm-hmm. But as you put the money to work, also make sure that, you know, your liabilities are not working against you and being counterproductive to your overall financial net worth, right? So keep in mind, you want to kind of clean those things up where it needs to be cleaned, but pump money like crazy into the market. Now, in terms of my philosophy and how I have my portfolio structured, which we'll dive into them in a bit, but my main investment philosophy is to actually live backwards. So a lot of people actually look at investing as a forward over time type of thing. I look at it in terms of like the end of my life coming backwards to my current age or like where I'm at now. Right. And so in doing that, my focus is really to buy back my time. Okay. So buy back my time, have quality time for family and great experiences. Because if I'm 85, 95, however many years God gave me, and let's say I'm a grandparent or I'm at that stage, if I reflect back on my life, right, how would I have wished I utilized my time, my resources, my energy, my focus, and my experiences, and what would I have built, right? What am I leaving behind? So that's why I focus on living backwards first. And so in doing that, I'm looking at it in terms of effectiveness and efficiency when it comes to investing, right? So effective meaning, hey, did I accomplish my goals, right? Was I able to execute the dream? And then efficiency is like, okay, maximum output, maximum receiving, minimum input, right? Like that's what efficiency is about. How can I get the most without sacrificing the most, right? I want to sacrifice the least amount of time. And that means like, you know, time, energy, resources. How can I put the least amount of effort into something to gain the maximum outcome out of it, right? And so I'm essentially what you would call your laziest investor in the stock market. Okay. And another thing I kind of focus on is ROI versus ROT, right? So that's return on investment versus return on time. Me, I'm selfish. I want both. Okay. I want return on my investment and I want return on my time. One or the other is a lose-lose situation, right? It's a two-sided coin and you need both sides to keep the balance. That's the yin and the yang. So if I have return on investment, I have all the money, but I have no time, I failed. Right. If I have all the time in the world, but no money, well, that's a problem because now I need to get my butt to work and go find three jobs or something. Right. So it's about really maximizing my return in the stock market with the least amount of time, energy, effort, brain power, stress, and so forth. And in doing that, I'm able to retain more of my time. I can use my time for the things I care more about and value and experiences I want to have, as opposed to focused on, you know, charts, the news, everything 24/7. Then it's like I'm working for Wall Street. And the whole point of investing the money is so I don't have to be glued and working as much and as long. So money at work is better than me at work. And that's something I say often. I'd rather sleep and go about my life while my money's working 24/7, you know. So I think that's kind of really, I would say those are the main bullet points in my strategy. And then, you know, once Josh shares his pieces a bit, then we'll start to kind of dive more into like the portfolio itself.
Man, those are some great points, Bafi. Great points. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, where when I ask people who are interested in like day trading and stuff like that, I'm like, well, like, why? Like, why are you interested in that strategy? And a lot of them are just like, you know, I want to quit my job. Like, I don't want to have a job, or, you know, I want to live my life however I want it. And I'm like, you realize if you go down the trading routes, you're just kind of swapping out your current job for much more stressful. It's not even just another job. It's much more stressful because there's so many damn variables that are involved when it becomes to being a trader. And of course, like there's, you know, I'm not going to hate on trading completely because there are one in a hundred people who actually do make some money from it. Like it's not like a thing I would say is completely useless, but for 90% of people, like the odds are kind of against you. Like most people just don't really have the skill set to do so. Mm-hmm. Plus it's such an advanced concept. It's kind of similar to, you know, if you're like a med student and you're just like, I want to be a doctor in the next couple of weeks. It's like, well, slow down there. You have a lot of stages that you need to master first before you get there. And at the same time, it's just like, for me, it's like, what are you trying to get out of the stock market in general? I want to get my time back. Like similar to Bafi, return on time. I love that analogy. That's exactly what I'm after. And for me, trading strategies or strategies that involve me having my pulse on the market 24/7 is not really the approach I want to take. I want to be able to give great companies my money, go live my life how I want to live it, and let them make myself richer. Like that's my strategy ultimately. So I love that, Bafi, and I think we're pretty aligned on that specifically. Pierce, how about you, my friend?
I'd like to go back on this because I have this written down. I have a notepad right here, and I didn't even read from it. And so this is kind of broken down for my strategy. You know, the first what I had to do is I had to define, you know, what my goal was for investing. Mm-hmm. And then I had to define how long do I want to invest in for. And then after that, it's, you know, will I need the money? So these are all situations that I think we can all attest to is, you know, what is your goal? What are your outcomes? How long are you going to do it for? And so everyone's answer is going to be slightly different. And then it's like, and then my next one is the risk tolerance. How much risk am I willing to take? You know, higher risk equals higher rewards. And so at the age that I'm at, you know, obviously, like I said before, I could take a higher risk. And so, but the returns will be greater, but the losses could also be greater. And then I had to figure out once I started getting investing, how to automate my investments, right? It's like, you know, I get paid, you know, people get paid biweekly. So it's every time a check hits, you know, however much money you allocate goes out of your account straight to the investment account. And then you tell the money what to do. And then it's just monitoring and adjusting it, you know, figuring out, you know, what's going on, you know, paying attention to it and, you know, watching the numbers go up, watching the numbers go down, and hopefully over the course of how long you're investing for, they go up. But that's it. I just wanted to pipe in right there.
I love it. I love it.
Like it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think for the automation part, like that's an important call out as well, because one of the best things you could do as a newer investor, just kind of starting to learn the game, is trying to take yourself out of the equation to make the investment decisions. And when you set up those auto buys every week, every paycheck, biweekly, every month, whatever it is, you're taking yourself out of the equation to make those consistent investments. It's such a powerful, simple way to stay consistent with investing, especially when times get tough, because inevitably there's going to be a moment where there's a bunch of news articles questioning the stock market's future, where things are super turbulent. Maybe you're hearing stories of companies doing massive layoffs or going bankrupt, whatever it is. There's going to be times where it's going to get tough to continue to press that buy button. And when you have automation set up to where it's automatically pressing that buy button every paycheck, every time you got money in your bank account, it's going to be a lot easier to stay consistent with it. So that was a great call out, Pierce. I think a lot of newer investors would benefit from automating everything as much as possible.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, it helps simplify it, you know, because you don't necessarily have to think and worry about it all the time. It's like by focusing on the simple things, you know, just, okay, hey, if I can throw however much in, you know, I guess, you know, I don't have to really think about it. It already comes out of my account. And then, you know, the big thing that that you guys preach about, I think we can all attest to is, you know, you have to pay yourself first. And so that's, you know, a good step in the right direction of trying to pay yourself first rather than, you know, what do you have left after you pay all the stuff off? Or, you know, what money do I have left? So that's the first thing, right? As the money hits, it's already gone, dude. I don't even get to see it. I just see, oh, there's money taken out of the account.
Nice. I love it. I love it. I think, you know what? I'm actually looking forward to hearing you guys' portfolios and what's like how you guys have actually, right? Because there's the philosophy piece, the strategy there, right? And then it's like, okay, how does the strategy translate to the account? You know what I mean? Because some people are going to be like, well, yeah, this sounds good. Great. I like it. Yeah, I want to buy my time too. I want to make money. I want my freedom. But it's like, what does that look like in, like, you know, in the account and the meaning, the context behind the account?
This is going to be the fun part. I'll go first. Let's jump into the meat of the podcast. So we're gonna reveal all of our portfolio structures, just kind of how we have them all set up. And keep in mind, we're all going to have probably different strategies, not necessarily strategies, because like our philosophy is all pretty much in line. If you kind of listen back to what we kind of mentioned, but just because our philosophies are in line doesn't mean our asset allocations are going to be the same, because we're all different ages. We all have different goals. We all come from different backgrounds.
Yep.
We all have different income levels. So there's just so many variables that are going to inevitably change how we structure our own portfolios. So for my portfolio, it's structured in two parts. So I have two core parts. So my first part of my portfolio, which actually makes up a majority of it, is my index fund portfolio. And roughly 85% of my investments are in this specific portfolio. So a majority of my investments, of all the money I'm investing on a weekly basis, that tends to be my cadence with investing, is going to this portfolio. And if we dive deeper into the index fund portfolio, 65% of it goes straight into an S&P 500 index fund. So that's going to be the 500 top companies in the United States. These are the titans that are essentially the engine of the American economy and even the global economy. We can touch on that a little bit later. And then the other 40% of that portfolio is going to be in a NASDAQ 100 index fund. And kind of connecting the dots back from my philosophy, my original philosophy and my strategy, I'm younger, I'm 28 years old, and I plan to invest for a few decades, at minimum a few decades. I'm not going to need the money for a few decades, so I have a long investment time horizon. And because I'm younger and want to take advantage of my age, I'm okay with adding some additional concentrated exposure to some of these massive growth tech companies, which is what the NASDAQ 100 index fund gives me exposure to. So just a little kind of tying it all together, this core index fund portfolio, which makes up 85% of my total investments, 60% of it is split up into an S&P 500 index fund, and then 40% roughly is split up into a NASDAQ 100 index fund. Now, something I tend to get often is like, well, hey, there's some overlap there, right, Josh? Like you have some overlap in some of those companies. A lot of the top NASDAQ 100 companies are also the top in the S&P 500. And my response is, yes, that's precisely the point, is I want to concentrate additional exposure into those companies. So it's a more aggressive strategy, investment strategy, but based on my risk tolerance and my goals at this point in my life, I'm okay with it. Let's dive into the second part of my portfolio. So this is going to be what I call the asymmetric risk portfolio. And this makes up 15% roughly of my total investments. So the idea behind this portfolio, this smaller portion, is it's a lot more risky. And there's a lot more uncertainty with this portfolio. And it's something that I'm ultimately okay with, because for one, I do enjoy the individual stock game a little bit. Like I like to research companies. I like to keep my pulse on the earnings occasionally, right? Like I like to follow along with a few companies. Like that's something I enjoy. So I do have a little bit of individual stocks. And that's where this asymmetric risk portfolio, and the idea behind this portfolio is ultimately I'm okay with this portfolio, this part essentially going to zero, but I'm also going to position it into a way where it could potentially do really, really well over the next 10 to 15 years. So like all the positions I have in this portfolio are either companies or assets that I have done research on and believe will do really well over the next few decades. At the same time, I'm okay if this portion of my portfolio goes to zero. It's like, I'm okay to lose it all, essentially, right? Ideally, in a perfect world, I wouldn't, but due to the nature of where I'm at in my life and due to my own risk tolerance, I want to take advantage of my age, my youth, and take a little bit more risky investments or have some exposure to some riskier investments to have that chance to potentially outperform, right? So like that's that small portion. Keep in mind, a vast majority of my portfolio is still in great index funds that hold these top great stocks that are the growth engine of the American economy. But if we dive deeper into my risk portfolio that makes up 15% of the total portfolio, most of that is going to be in individual stocks. And I do, you know, a smaller portion in that portfolio, a smaller portion does have some exposure to crypto and some startup companies as well. So I've had the opportunity to invest in a few private companies that aren't actually on the public stock market, and I've taken advantage of that. So like those also go into that asymmetric risk portfolio. So that's just a general overview of my asset allocation at this current stage of my life. And I think one important thing to call out here is my strategy is going to change. Like it's going to evolve. Like I'm not going to be aggressive risk, or I'm not going to take an aggressive investment approach for the rest of my life. You know, things are going to change. I think as I gain more responsibilities or as things kind of change my life, like I'm not going to want to take as much risk, right? Like, especially once I get a certain amount invested in my index fund portfolios, like once the math works out, like you could just really coast into, you know, after a certain point, you just kind of let the compound interest do its thing and you don't really have to take any aggressive risk, you know? But I another thing to highlight with my strategy is all the aggressive risks, like especially with my asymmetric risk portfolio that I'm taking, it's stuff that I'm okay. Like it matches my risk tolerance, my personal risk tolerance. And it's, I've done the math and I'll be fine if that portfolio goes to zero. I'm still going to be able to retire early and enjoy my life on my own terms. So that's a quick overview of my investment strategy, and hopefully some of you kind of find it helpful.
Nah, that's fire, man. That's sick. Piers, you want to go?
I got this. Okay. So I'm invested in, you know, just a couple of things. So, but my portfolio is broken down into 60% stocks and 40% bonds. And so what my equities is I'm invested into large cap growth, which is what equates to 19% of my portfolio. And then I'm also invested into emerging markets. So what that means is international stocks. You know, the last couple of years, I've seen markets such as India and China booming. So I've invested some money into there, and that's 18%. And then there's large cap value, which is 15%. Large cap blend, which is 13%. Mid cap blend, 11%. Mid cap blend value, 10%. Mid cap growth, 5%. Small cap, 2%. Small cap blend, 1%. Yada yada. And then I'm in, yeah, mostly bonds. And then I have 7% of my portfolio in a money market fund, just sitting there. And a lot of those, like Josh says, a lot of like those the growth and the value funds that I'm in, they're all overlapping. So it's like I have the exposure in multiple different things. So like my large cap growth is going to be the same as my large cap value. They're both going to have like funds such as VOO or RSP in them. So yeah, mine's pretty simple. I mean, 60% stocks and 40% bonds, but I don't have any individual stocks. All my stuff is in mutual funds and ETFs.
Solid, man. Solid. And Pierce, just a kind of follow up question with like that strategy specifically. You are kind of in the process of changing your portfolio in a sense, right? Because I remember early in the podcast specifically, you were saying that you do want to kind of restructure it a little bit more to be a bit more aggressive because go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do. I mean, the money that's in there right now it used to be an absurd amount of money for me. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm getting more comfortable with the amount that I see in there. And so that means I'm getting more comfortable with the amount that I think that I can manage per se. Mm-hmm. And so the money that I see in the bonds is mostly for safety and structure. You know, it's just for like, oh shit, you know, if shit hits the fan, okay, cool, I got my bond, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm at the point now to where I'm trying to take a more of a risky approach because, you know, with my advisor and everything, my retirement plans by 2039. And so I have to structure a way and invest however, you know, AKA so much money per year to able to hit that goal. So yeah, that's I'm in the process of restructuring right now, actually.
Love it. Love it. And ultimately, I would say just based on your experience level, like it sounds like a good portfolio in my eyes, you know, just based on where you're at, like you're still learning different strategies and different ways to kind of go about structuring your own portfolio. But yeah, thanks for sharing. That sounds great.
Buffy.
Yeah, man, let's do it. Let's cook. That's awesome, man. Pierce, you're doing all the right things there. I like the way you have it set up. And like you said, as you get a little bit more acclimated to the account, its movements, right? You get more familiar with it. Now you're like, oh, okay, I can handle, you know, managing it this way or taking a little bit more risk. And sometimes that's what it is, right? It takes time. Nobody, like we all started and we didn't know how much risk or what to do, how to move about it right away. And so I think, you know, that's a big testament that shows like, hey, look, get in the game. And over time, you become familiar, you become comfortable. And the more you keep learning, then now your ability to manage these portfolios and actually, you know, have strategies that are going to be ideal and help you get a lot more comes to play. That's why the education piece, I know we stress it a lot because it really is the difference, literally. I mean, you look at athletes, right? Look at entertainers. Some of these people make millions and millions of money, but they can't keep any. They don't know how to manage it. And so the education is really the biggest wealth gap equalizer right here. So good stuff, Pierce. Cool. So, yeah, in terms of my portfolios, man, I have a very interesting, interesting setup, you know? And so, if you remember earlier in the episode, I did mention that I kind of live backwards, right? And so I'm thinking legacy, next generation, then all the way back down to now. So I started with the longest term vehicle first, which is my 401k. And a lot of people sleep on 401ks. I was very fortunate when I first started working early on in my early 20s. My supervisor told me right away, like, hey, go over there to HR, start your 401k today. I don't even care if you qualify for the match or not yet. It doesn't matter. Start it today. Because she explained to me how much money she missed out on by waiting 5 years before starting her 401k. You know? And so if that's the first thing out the gate here, anybody that don't have a 401k or have if you have access to it, but you're not kind of taking it a little bit serious or you're not contributing to it, make sure you do so because you'll be surprised. Okay. So with my 401k, I started with that because that account is really where you will put the least amount of money, but it will grow the most, especially if you start early in your 20s due to compound interest. So when it comes to my 401k, 100% of it is invested in VOO, right? That's the S&P 500. So, I mean, that is very aggressive for a 401k. Almost nobody has a 401k allocation that is strictly 100% equities like mine, okay? And the reason why is because I don't plan on living on my 401k at all. It's actually not for me to retire on. It's for the next generation. So they're not even here yet, and they're already building wealth, right? So that's the reason why I have it that aggressive, because there's no need to have bonds or money market exposure, because honestly, that account has what if I have 40 more years left, 50, whatever is left, and plus their life, right? So even in the first 30 years, they're not going to need it. So realistically, that account has like a good 70 years to grow before anybody ever needs to even touch it, right? And so my goal is to get it to a certain point by the age of 33, and I won't really have to actually contribute much to it, just enough to take advantage of the company match. You know, so currently I'm 30. I'm turning 31 this August, which I'm excited about. By the way, I'm going to be celebrating my birthday in Toronto, Canada. So if we have any Canadian listeners, would definitely love some tips on things to check out while I'm out there in Toronto. And if you live in Canada or you live in Toronto as well, it'd be cool to potentially maybe meet up while I'm out there. You know, I know Drake and Kendrick's beef been crazy. But we do still love Drake. He does give us a lot of good music and some bangers. You know what I mean? But back to the subject at hand, once I kind of reach that goal, the number I want to be at by 33, that account is going to be well over 1.5 million by the time I even get close to retirement age. Right. And the fact that I can pass down easily 1.5 million to the next generation. That is how many of us are going to be able to change, the generations in life and our legacies and future, you know? So that's kind of how my 401k is set up. So in a nutshell, 100% VOO, super aggressive. This is high octane. Just pouring gasoline on it and the flames just burn bigger. So that's my 401k. Now, my next account is my Robinhood account. And that's actually the one that is a little bit more aligned with my retirement, like in terms of my personal retirement goals. Okay. So as of right, I plan on retiring on this account mainly by around the age of 50-ish. You know what I mean? Like even if I can reach retirement age before that, I don't care to stop working or contributing, you know? So some people are just like, all right, I'm going to retire and then sit there and then do what? Just wait for time to pass to die? No, I'm gonna still contribute to society, you know? But by the age of 50, the latest, it will probably be 1 million plus as well, you know? And so I'm very, very happy about the efforts that's gone into building that account. And so just to kind of speak on the allocation a bit, the Robinhood account is 75% in ETFs. And so the ETFs that I own are SOXX. That's the ticker symbol. And that's a semiconductor ETF. Okay. And so when you think of semiconductors, you think of NVIDIA, AMD, right? Intel, all the companies that make a lot of the chips, software, processes, GPUs, CPUs, the data centers, right? That's really what that's made up of. So 11.6% of my portfolio is in stocks. And then next is VUG. That's a Vanguard Growth ETF. It's also centered around mainly tech companies for the most part. And so VUG is 15.8% of my portfolio. And then I have MGK, which is a mega cap ETF, and that's 13.3%. And then next is ticker symbol IWF. That is like your Russell 2000, Russell 100 type of fund. And it's more like, you know, mid cap to, you know, younger companies, or not younger, but like small cap companies to mid cap. And that's 7.8% of the portfolio. And then VGT holds 12.6% of the portfolio. And VGT is really Vanguard growth technology fund, right? So it's literally just tech, heavy tech, right? And then lastly, I have VOO, which is S&P 500, similar to what Josh just spoke on, in terms of the 500 companies that really speaks to the global economy and the U.S. economy. That's 11% of the portfolio. So you can see within my ETFs, it's quite aggressive, but I've designed it that way deliberately, you know, because that's a tolerance that I don't mind. I don't mind taking on that little bit of additional risk. And the portfolio has been doing incredible things over the years. So I'm excited for the future as we lean more into tech, right? And then 25% of that portfolio is also in individual stocks. Now, with the individual stocks, I generally don't recommend that one should have any individual stock that is, say, more than 3-4% of the entire portfolio, right? And I generally don't recommend people have like a bunch of million individual stocks, like how I was building my own damn index fund in my first year of investing, you know? And I think it's important to disclose that, because sometimes people might hear what you're doing or see what you're doing and think it will work for them in the same fashion, right? So always take some things with a grain of salt. But I only own top dog companies when it comes to individual stocks. I only buy individual stocks that make money, that have a great business, that we all literally depend on. And essentially, you know, they're not going out of business anytime soon, and they're going to keep winning for a long time. So with those individual stocks, I have Apple, which holds 3.8%. I have Google, that's 2.3%. Amazon is 3%. Meta, 4.4%. Microsoft is 3.8%, and Nvidia is 8.5%. Now, the caveat with Nvidia is I've owned this stock for many years, and so it's been killing it, and I've been adding over the years, but we've seen what Nvidia has done over the last 2 years, and it's been exponentially insane. So most of that is really just more the profits and the gains on top of it, not more so like it being, you know, me funding it. So that's why that one is like kind of big in there. And then lastly, Kava. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of Kava, but that's Mediterranean food, and it's kind of in the same quote unquote competition or industry with like Chipotle, right? And Kava's, I mean, really good food, great fiber. You get a lot of your grains, you get a lot of very healthy menu options. incredible. I love it. And, you know, I bought it last year in October, and, you know, that position has basically doubled. So in terms of my Robinhood portfolio, that's how I was kind of set up, right? Like I said, 401k, next generation, not even retiring on. Robinhood is the one that I'm going to be a little bit more focused on in terms of retiring and living off of. And then following that, I have a Vanguard account. And I've been really building this account to ultimately use it for purchasing a house, right? Or a condo or property. That's more for real estate. And it's at the point where it is definitely more than a down payment. So that's great news, right? But the goal is not to just simply own a property, just to say I own a property or have one, right? Just because sometimes, a lot of times, there's fear of missing out, right? You hear about real estate. Oh my gosh, the prices are never coming down. And so you can easily rush into do something. So sometimes just because you can do it doesn't mean you should, and it doesn't mean it's the right time, right? That's an art that I learned and mastered it over the years. And it's helped me stay out of a lot of trouble. It's helped me keep a great peace of mind and enjoy life without too much stress, right? So that's a few things I'm kind of looking at before I pull the trigger on something like that. I'm looking at, you know, how does the property really enhance my life and my overall life goal and experience, right? Because you might get the property, but now you got to worry about property managers, or you got to worry about maintenance. The boiler just broke. Now I got to replace the roof, or the tenants are no good. Like I said, I'm the laziest investor you're going to find, right? So I don't want to be bothered with all that stuff. Right. It's like, so what type of stress and headache am I going to inherit by picking up a property like that? Right. Also, the rates are crazy. The prices of these properties, depending on location, and so many nuances there. So I'm not ready to spend time in diving into that and that whole process. And it could take a long time. That's not where I'm at the moment. So for now, I'll let the Vanguard account keep growing. And to speak on the exposure or the asset allocation of that account, it is 100% in ETFs. 35% of it is in VOO, another 35% is in VUG, and the last 30% is in VGT, right? And Josh had touched on this a little bit. Sometimes you will see a little bit of an overlap and similar funds in some of these things. And the reason why is because these things work, okay? It may not be the sexiest, but I'm telling you, that thing gonna get you to exactly where you're trying to go and some, right? And then my last account is a Charles Schwab account that I have. And this is really more like my fun account, right? So it's mainly for like vacation, leisure activities, and enjoyment. Currently, there's actually a sizable amount too, and it's big enough for a down payment as well. And it's invested in VOO and VUG only. That's split 50-50 across the board. And one thing that I want people to also take into account is throughout these four portfolios and how it's set up that I shared, you will notice that I did not mention or focus on dividend investing at all, right? And that's because at this particular moment in my philosophy and my strategy, all I care about and my focus is on growth and compound interest, not dividends at this particular junction, right? So maybe 15 to 20 years from now, like Josh and Pierre said, you know, strategies can change. So maybe 15, 20 years from now, I might be like, you know what? Great. I've gotten the growth that I want. Let me shift a little bit more into dividends so I can kind of do other stuff with that cash flow aspect of it. And then we'll see what happens. So in a nutshell, that's where I'm at. 401k for next generation, Robinhood to retire on, Vanguard, ultimately buying a house or property with it. Right now, we're just kind of chilling and letting it simmer because the stock market is hot and we're going to keep riding that out. And then Charles Schwab for leisure and fun and activities. So in a nutshell, when you invest, attach certain goals to the account. If the account is there and the goal is just for the account to just make money, just to make money, you actually make less money, right? When your goals are noble and they enhance your family, the quality of your life, the quality of life in general, you're able to contribute more to society, you're going to get blessed because your why is the most important thing in this entire world. So if your why is noble and you're doing it for the right reasons, it's easy to keep emotions out of it. It's easier to stay on track. It's easier to do what you need to do. It's easier to not get lost in all of the information, all of the fluff, all of the mess, right? Because winning at life and winning in certain areas is fairly simple. It doesn't mean it's easy, but it's simple. And if you can do the simple things and the little things well, the bigger stuff going to take care of itself. So yeah, welcome to my portfolios.
I love it, man. And quick shout out to VOO. Sounds like we all got that in our portfolios.
Yeah, VOO is the GOAT. That's like Michael Jordan right now. That's the Michael Jordan of this game.
It really is. It really is. And I really like the point you made, Bafi, about having specific goals for specific accounts, especially if you have multiple accounts. I think ultimately it's just going to give you that clarity, right? And it's going to help you give you that North Star of like what you're doing to begin with. Because
precisely,
like you said, like if you're just throwing money in account for whatever reason, you don't really have any clarity or
goals. What are you doing it for?
Exactly. And then it's going to be harder to stay to the plan, stick to the consistency when things get tough in the market because you don't really have a strong why behind the portfolio that you're building. Exactly. So I love that, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, you heard it here, everybody. We got our portfolios out there. We got the asset allocations, kind of the meats. And one of the quick point outs to make is you'll see how different we are with asset allocations. And although we all have similar philosophies, like we're all pretty much in line with long-term investing, having an ownership mindset, and investing for, you know, in the stock market without playing any of the games, you know, we all are pretty much in line with that. We still have different asset allocations. And it doesn't matter what investor you talk to or speak to, they're all going to have everybody's going to have different asset allocations, right? Like we're all going to have slightly different portfolios, and that's okay because we all have different goals. If we all had the same goal, if we were all investing for the same reason, if we were all the same age and had the same retirement timeline, then maybe we would all have the same portfolio. But because we're all different, because we all have different risk tolerances, and because we have different investment goals, our portfolios are going to probably be different as well. So it's reasonable to expect that. And don't think, like, even if you're listening to this and you have a completely different portfolio than all of us, don't think that's necessarily wrong. It's always good to kind of get different insights and learn from other investors to see how they have their stuff set up to maybe restructure your own portfolio. And ultimately, that's what the Market Hustle podcast is all about, is we're going to hear from people from different backgrounds, different investment philosophies, so that we can learn from each other. Because that's how you're going to gain more confidence over your own investment strategy, is have it kind of tested against other people's philosophies and adapt yours based on what you learn.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a last minute question for the both of you. And now that you guys have been investing for quite a bit of time, you have a lot of experience. If you were to start over with the knowledge and experience you have today, how would you approach investing in the stock market?
VOO, dude. Simple.
Yeah, I'd have to pretty much agree with Pierce. I think the best way to start out in the market is to go in as simple as possible. Start with just a broad-based index fund, whether it's VOO, or if you want to go a step further, VT, which gives you a total exposure to the global stock markets. And these are pretty basic funds, but you're going to get exposure to the entire stock market. So if the stock market grows, your portfolio is going to grow. And ultimately, it's going to give you one of the best things out there, which is experience. You're going to learn about the dynamics of the green and red days kind of constantly shifting from one another. You're going to learn how to control your emotional impulses from making decisions that maybe aren't in your best interest over the long term, which is probably the most important part. And I think if I would have knew what VOO was, you know, back when I first got started, or what index funds were, it would have been, I'd be much further along now, and it would have been just such a bigger advantage, because I wouldn't have had to make some of the mistakes that I made, and I still would have learned kind of having some skin in the game in the form of index funds, and then ultimately being open to changing your strategy or adjusting your strategy as you gain experience, as you gain insights, and as you understand yourself and your own investment goals and risk tolerance more.
Couldn't agree more.
Well said, man. Well said. And since you guys both touched on that side of the game, I'm going to touch on, if I had to start over, I'm going to touch on the individual stock part. Okay. And I think this is one of the most powerful philosophies that I think anybody that's interested in individual stocks can implement. And that is, for each decade, there are about two inventions, right? Or advancements, technology that comes along that transforms our entire planet and our entire way of life. So I think when you're looking for individual stocks, you don't want to just be looking for whatever everybody's just talking about and whatever you see, whatever you hear. Look for the things that's actually going to change our life for the long term, right? And let me break it down this way real quick. So let's say from 1990 to 2000, right? The two inventions in this scenario would be the PCs, right? We had our you know, they had the big ass PCs with a big Mac, right? Microsoft came out with that, and the Mac, right? You know, Mac had theirs as well. So I think that was the first big advancement breakthrough in there. And it didn't just change our way of life in terms of personal life, but also the enterprises, the businesses, right? You know, they all started using these tools. The second thing in that same era was really the internet. Right. Remember back then it was like AOL. That was like the main, the ones that were like kind of the biggest. And but look at what the internet has allowed all of us to do all the way up to today. Right. It's given us literally access to the entire globe, businesses, everything. I mean, we're on Wi-Fi right now. We're on the internet, and it's gotten better and better over time. And look at the impact that's had. Right. So that's the two in that decade from 2000 to 2010. We had, you know, our personal devices in terms of like our iPhones, right? Back around that time, I know I'm dating myself a little bit. Some of us might be younger, but, you know, back then to listen to music, you had like Walkmans, and that's like you had the disc version or like the CD version. And you literally had, you know, with the wire and everything like that. Jesus Christ, that's like an antique product now, right? And then for a phone, you had like you used to actually put quarters or like coins in the payphone thing and actually be able to make phone calls, or you had like one of those big phone, like wireless phone ones, or the ones that you actually like roll, right? So we had the phone. And then camera wise, we had the Kodak cameras. We had the Polaroid one, like the ones you take and it comes out of it. You know what I mean? So all these products was literally blended into one device, which we now see as iPhones, right? So think about what the iPhone has done in life for us as consumers, and families and friends and businesses and everything on the planet, right? Just think about the change that has brought in their entire ecosystem of how we communicate and connect. So that's one, right? So that's Apple. And then we have social media, right? We started off with MySpace, right? Tom, that was his name back then.
Shout out to Tom.
Shout out to Tom. And then my profile was nice, dude. Like I had music on there.
Got the playlist,
right?
Yep.
You can change the background, do all types of cool stuff, right? So that was look at what, from MySpace to Facebook to Snapchat to Instagram to Twitter, now X, right? To all these other modes of social media and apps that has developed from that. Think about what it has done for small businesses and everybody in between. Our ability to share our experience, share our content, and help other people build and generate wealth for their families. Powerful. 2010 to 2020, right? We're looking at, right? I mean, AI is not new, but we're looking at the, in terms of supply chain / like e-commerce, look at Amazon, Walmart, just what, what they've been able to do. And then also allow people to buy and sell goods and reach customers and clients that they would have never, ever in a million years had a chance. I mean, I can buy something from China right now. I can just buy something from a small merchant in a different state and it'll be here in 2 days shipping because I got Amazon Prime. You know what I mean? Like, it's insane when you think about some of these advancements in technology. And right now we're in 2020, going 2020 to 2030. The biggest hot topic button is obviously AI, right? Think about what that's already doing and how it's not just helping businesses, but we have students use GPT. You know what I mean? Like, you could, if you want to learn something, you could, instead of going to search everything, you can go to one little spot, type exactly what you're looking for, and it's going to spit out good, decent, competent information that you can build on top of. So anybody, I say all that to kind of give that timeline so people can see there are certain things, but there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of companies and thousands of companies, but look at what these ones have done in terms of changing our entire fabric of life. If you're going to buy individual stocks, buy the ones that are winning in that fashion, or buy the ones that have that strong potential to really do that for the future, because that's where the 10 baggers are. That's where somebody's about to get arrested or something, man. Hopefully it's not me.
Is there sirens going off?
Yeah, man.
Your mic doesn't pick it up. So
that's good. Awesome. Nice. Hey, you got the right mic. See? Shout out technology.
Technology, there we go.
You know, so when you look for individual stocks, don't just look at what's hot, what's hype, what everybody's talking about. Look at the things that are really going to impact and shape our lives now and the future. Because guess what? When you invest based on life, you're going to win. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when. You know, so focus on that piece when it comes to individual stocks and definitely do your homework.
Powerful, man. Powerful perspective. And I read something the other day as well, just kind of on that line, where I didn't realize that antibiotics, we didn't even have that 100 years ago. Like 100 years ago, we didn't have antibiotics.
I didn't even touch on that, right? I mean, even through COVID, right? You think about the infrastructure just for healthcare, pharmaceutical, right? Antibiotics, just basic medication and stuff like that. Dude, people would die. You know how many people were dying back in the days? Just off like some stupid little infection. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like insane. Like you get a little cut. Oh, crap. This is it. Like
that's game.
Wow. Yeah. But COVID, throughout COVID, imagine how much more lives we would have lost throughout these COVID, you know, times if we didn't have our medical professionals and everybody that's dedicated to science and saving lives. Not just human lives. We have animal lives, livestock, right? Because you know, I like chicken. I like cows. I like goat. I like to eat all of them. We need to make sure they're healthy so I can enjoy them.
Yeah, no, it's powerful. And I think that's a great perspective in order to see kind of what's I think a lot of people, when they think of the stock market, like it could just seem super abstract, and it's hard to understand what it is until you understand what's happening here. Like, what are all these businesses doing? Like, what are they, you know, of course, everybody knows that they're after money. I think that's pretty much common knowledge, but it's just like, how are they getting it? And in order for these companies to get sustainable income coming into their hands, they got to provide some sort of value to society. Right? Yeah, because if they're not, people are going to stop handing them money and then they're going to go bankrupt. You know, one thing to remember is profit is the oxygen for businesses. Like if they can't turn a profit, if people aren't giving them money for their products because their products suck, that business is going to die. money, profit is oxygen for these businesses. So powerful stuff, man. Powerful stuff. Well, let's go ahead and just, you know, quickly wrap it up. We went a little over like we always do, but I think we had to because there are some great points being made, and hopefully all the listeners were able to learn some powerful stuff and have some perspective shifting taking place as well, because this was some great stuff, man. So let's go with this. If you could give one piece of advice to somebody who is struggling to diversify their portfolio or figure out how to kind of structure up their portfolio, what would you tell them? And Bafi, Pierce, either of you can go first.
I could take a quick stab at it.
Let's do it.
What I would tell them is to look at everything around them in their house, right? Everything at their job, everything in their car. And I'm not talking about just look at the mirror or just look at the TV. No, really look at the materials, the fabrics, the wall, you know, the your towels, your detergents, you know, the water that you drink, your faucet, the electricity. Like, look at everything in and around your house. Look at everything in your car, whether it's the leather, the seat, the knobs, right? The gas, the oil, the tires, the rubber, the paint, you know, observe, take one day out of your life. And as you go through your day, don't go through your day just blind and tuning everything out. Just really have a keen eye and just observe everything around you. How it got there, the things that are going to run out and you're going to have to purchase more of them, right? And then when you get outside, look at the cars. When you get to work, look at everything. Everything around you. When you go to a restaurant, look at the food. Every single thing around you, everything that you see, is a business, right? Because in order for it to get to you, for you to benefit from the service, the product, the goods, somebody has to spend money, spend time, spend energy, spend their skills to deliver everything that you see exactly where they're at and how you benefit from it. That is the most powerful and best way to look at it in diversifying when it comes to investing. And by simply buying VOO, like Josh and Pierce touched on not long ago, that alone literally gives you ownership on everything that I just mentioned that is around you, that you see everywhere you go. That is probably, in my opinion, the most powerful way of gaining some comfort and being excited and being, you know, trusting the stock market, trusting the system, trusting that, hey, this is not a fluke. This is not a gimmick. This is reality. Mm-hmm. Right? So invest based on life. And the best way to do that and get that healthy diversification that you're struggling with or unsure about is to buy VOO, because guess what? Everything in there is everything that you see and touch and feel and experience. Not just you, the whole world. We all experience and use the same stuff, you know? So that would be my two cents.
I love
it. Yeah, man, I can't agree more. I mean, for me, it was how I diversify would just, you know, is ETFs. I mean, different ETFs for different things. I mean, there's how many different sectors in the stock market, right? And so if you want to diversify, touch on every single sector in the stock market. I mean, it's really just dependent on what you want out of it. And like Boffy said, like everything around you is a business. So if you're interested in something, I mean, go purchase an ETF around it. If you're interested in you know, whatever it is, oil, you know, you like cars like I do. So what do? I buy oil stock because, you know, cars run off oil. So that's how I diversified.
Good stuff, man. Good stuff. And I'll just touch on a little way to kind of educate yourself more. If you are this listener that we're talking about, maybe you're in the early stages of trying to figure out how to kind of construct your portfolio, or you have some uncertainty about how your portfolio is currently structured, I think ETFs are one of the most powerful ways to not only start investing, but to continue investing. Like, even as an advanced experienced investor, you heard it from both Boffy and I, like we've been in this game for over a decade. We both still have a massive core strategy of just investing in different ETFs, right? Like, ETFs are such a powerful tool because they decrease your odds of losing money. So I have a podcast episode, episode 20. It was like a 12-minute quick segment where I dive in a little deeper into the concept and the world of ETFs. So give that podcast a listen, episode 20. I think it'll be powerful for anybody who is struggling with understanding how to potentially start out their portfolio. And then, of course, VOO, one of our favorite ETFs. They need to sponsor this podcast, man. We got to call them up. Be like, you got Vanguard, come sponsor this podcast.
They're going to start giving us some shares.
Exactly. But to me, that's a great way to just get your feet in the water, essentially, and gain experience with the market. And don't be afraid to like change your investment strategy down the road. Like, of course, like maybe you are interested more in the dividend side of things, or more interested in having exposure to a specific part of the economy. You can always add that in later, like as you gain experience in the broad market, right? So don't be afraid to just jump in, gain the experience of just mastering your investor mindset, because that's probably the most important part, to control your own impulses to make irrational decisions, because like it's going to happen. Like, you're going to have to tame that part inside of you as an investor. And the best way to do that is first through experience, but also through education. So continue to listen to these podcasts, continue to read different books, continue to watch YouTube videos, and just educate yourself as much as possible. And one quick actionable advice is, if there's a certain topic that you're just not completely clear on, maybe it's ETFs, maybe it's compound interest, maybe it's index funds, maybe it's a specific, maybe if you don't even know what VOO is and you're still kind of confused with what that is, do me a favor, go to Google and type in whatever that concept is that you're kind of struggling to grasp. And then I want you to, after you type that in, I want you to go through each and every article on that first page and read every single one. By the time you read every single article, you're going to be able to start teaching this stuff, right? Like, you're going to have a pretty grasp understanding of that specific concept. And do that every time you stump on something or there's just something that's unclear in the financial world for you. Use the internet to your advantage. You literally have all the information at your fingertips, so do something with it because it's going to benefit you if you do so and continue to lean into that curiosity. Real quick shout out before we officially wrap up this podcast. I had a great follower reach out to me, Noah. Noah recently reached a core milestone along his investment journey. He started investing not too long ago, He's been going back and forth on my page, asking me questions in my messages, following my content on Instagram at The Market Hustle. And he's actually an active listener to these podcasts. So quick shout out to Noah. He just recently hit a $100,000 investment milestone across Ooh. All of his accounts.
Here we go.
Yeah. Bravo.
Congratulations, Bravo. Noah. Congrats, congratulations. Noah.
Yeah. And see, this is where the fun really begins, right? The first 100 is the hardest. Now, easy peasy breezy.
100% bad. And do me a favor, buddy. Like, whenever you reach your milestone, whenever you reach that $100,000 milestone, I think we're going to start doing this. Send a message to me on Instagram, and we're going to start giving shout outs to everybody in the community who hits this important, amazing milestone. So, incredible. Love it. Love it.
Well done. Congrats.
Noah.
Good work.
This was a great episode, guys. I had a lot of fun doing this. I think it's going to help a lot of newer investors understand portfolio building and ideally kind of spark some light bulbs going off in people's heads to give them some ideas of the different ways that they can kind of construct their own portfolio. Now, I do want you to remember that just because a portfolio works for me or a portfolio works for Bafi or a certain portfolio works for Pierce, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for you. It's going to take time to find the perfect quote unquote portfolio that works for you. So don't be afraid to just start with something simple, whether it's VOO. But as you gain experience, you're going to start to understand what you like, what you are okay with having exposure to, and you can kind of always adjust. You're never too late to kind of adjust your portfolio strategy, you know? But the most important part is just to get started. Don't let the analysis paralysis get in the way. Of course, be thoughtful. Like, that's not to say just jump in the game and try to lose, you know, just gamble it all and just wing it. Like, be thoughtful. But if you've made it this far to the podcast, like, you're clearly already a thoughtful person since you've listened to over an hour of us talking about different portfolio strategies. So one thing to remember is you can always change your strategy down the road. So start, because the biggest experience is going to come from actually having the time in the market, right? Having your money actually in the market, having some skin in the game. So with that, that will be the conclusion of this amazing podcast. We will all be back next week tackling another great topic. Pierce and Bafi, thank you so much for coming back as co-host for another great episode. And that's a wrap for episode 23.
It's a wrap. Always a pleasure. Well done, Noah. Congrats once again.
See y'all next week. Bye-bye.
If you feel just like I do, link up, come and join this crew. Hey, I'ma go invest and I'ma watch my money double, take it to another level. With that market hustle, hey, always play it smart. You ain't dealing with a sucker, take it to another level. With that market hustle, I'ma hustle, hustle. 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 With that market hustle, go.